Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of The Promise of Tomorrow.
We really appreciate your coming by again as we explore the exciting world of the business of science. In the first half hour, we've got Sidney Johnston, who's a physicist, and he's going to be our lead story, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Also, a visit to the Den of Strangers, more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of. And in the second half hour, Mark Scheer, the president of CG Power, is stopping by, and Uli Hammer of Hanover Fairs is going to pay us a visit. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. And at the beginning of the next half hour, the fountain of useless information we have here on the set, where we get to ask the spirit of the fountain a probing question. But right now, let's get to our lead story. Sidney Johnston, he's a physicist. He has a plan to supply the entire electricity needs of the whole United States using solar. Well, in this program, we talk a lot about energy, and we've talked about wind, we've talked about coal and nuclear and a whole bunch of other stuff, and we don't get to talk very often about solar. But I want to introduce you to right now to Sid Johnston. He's a patent attorney, but more than that, he's a physicist. And he has got some extremely good ideas on solar. The fact is, he's presenting a paper at the IEEE Energy Conference this month on utility-scale solar systems. Welcome to the program, Sid.
Hello, Colonel. How are you?
Well, it's good to have you, and I understand you've got some pretty dramatic suggestions on solar. So would you tell us, give us kind of a preview of what this paper is going to be about?
Yes, sir. The paper is about the production of electrical energy using solar collectors and storing it as a battery by hydrogen and oxygen produced by electrolysis of water. And if we start with an overview that electrical production in the United States is about 4,200 million megawatt hours. And as a reference, we take the electrical energy production per year in the United States as 5,000 million megawatt hours. And these are numbers that come from the Department of Energy, Energy Information Administration, Electric Power Annual, which was published in January of 2010. The DOE/EIA Electric Power Annual. And that they gave the 4,200 million megawatt hours as, I think, 2009 production. Or no, I'm sorry, 2008 production.
Okay.
They didn't have the 2009 production. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking 5,000 as a round number, as a roundup number. Now, what we are talking about are solar reflectors that operate a closed cycle heat engine, generally referred to as a Stirling engine. And the reflectors have been developed at Sandia Laboratory with a company called Stirling Energy Systems.
Okay.
And you can read about that on the Sandia Laboratories webpage. Now, one reflector is about 30 feet in diameter and is attached to an individual Stirling engine and generates electricity from operation of the engine, converting heat from the sun, which is collected by the solar collector, and the output is electricity, electrical energy. Now, each unit produces somewhere between 10 and 25 kilowatt hours. And we assume that these reflectors receive 8 hours of good sunshine per day. Now, in the summer, they'll receive longer. In the winter, maybe shorter. But we took 8 hours as an average. Each solar reflector, if it's doing 10 kilowatts, will then produce 80 kilowatt hours per day. Divide this number into the 5,000 million megawatt hours and keep track of the decimal places, and you find that approximately 160 million reflectors, or if you compare 160 million reflectors with the number of automobiles on the highway, you will find that the numbers are comparable. So we were talking about a number of reflectors about equal to the number of cars running on the highway. And the land area that is needed now, we should talk about how much land area is needed. I do two calculations. One, we assume that each reflector requires an area of 30 meters by 30 meters, or 900 square meters.
Okay.
And then we redo it for 30 feet, which is one-third the distance on each side. And considerably smaller. So if we take the 30 meters by 30 meters, or 900 square meters per reflector, and 160 million reflectors, we find that you need an area of land 238 miles by 238 miles to put all of the reflectors. And this then is the area of land needed to produce the electrical production of the United States in kilowatt hours per year.
So what you're saying then is that we can supply the entire United States electrical demand for electricity on an area 136 miles by 136 miles. Is that what you're telling me?
238 miles if we make the reflectors take a 30 meter by 30 meter footprint. If we reduce the footprint to 10 meters by 10 meters, the number comes out 80 miles by 80 miles. And so 10 meters by 10 meters is probably too small. 30 meters by 30 meters is probably too large. So we take 100 miles by 100 miles as a happy medium. And with the precision of this calculation, 100 miles by 100 miles is a reasonable approximation.
So we set aside 100 miles by 100 miles in the desert somewhere, and it takes care of the entire electricity demands for the country. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. Now, my paper is inspired by a paper in the IEEE transactions, proceedings of the IEEE, number 98, issue 1, January 2010, by a gentleman named Abbott, A-B-B-O-T-T,
okay,
who is an Australian. And he wrote a paper that's in that journal, the IEEE, Proceedings of the IEEE, January 2010, in which he came to about the same conclusions. I read his paper, and then I redid the calculations, and came to the conclusions that he did, that an area of about 100 miles by 100 miles in the southwestern deserts of the United States could supply the entire electrical generation demand by the United States.
Well, I remember when I was talking to you about this offline, we were saying about how some people like Ed Morse of Caltech and others believe that fusion is going to be the dominant energy source within 20 years or so. And you made the comment that we already have fusion, that it's located 93 million miles away from us, and all we have to do is harness the fusion of our own sun and don't have to worry about any other kind of fusion. Isn't that what you told me?
That's what I told you, and it's right. As far as my backyard goes, having a nice fusion reactor 93 million miles away, where containment is by gravitation, is about as close as I want a fusion reactor to my backyard. If you notice the sun, if you look at it with a telescope with a solar filter, you will see great prominences coming off from the sun in which it ejects particles that are no longer contained. And if those particles sometimes hit the Earth, we notice it by northern lights and an interruption of radio communications and possibly overvoltages generated in the electric power grid. So the sun has containment, it's a fusion reactor with containment by gravitation, but the containment is not all that great, and the particles get away sometimes. And I don't want one of those any closer to my backyard than about 93 million miles.
Well, this sure brings up a lot of questions about the safety of the desert that we set aside with 100 square miles. Wouldn't it be open to sabotage pretty easy?
Well, we don't put it all in one place. Suppose we make 1,000 megawatt units and we put them scattered in the Sonoma Desert and the Texas Desert and the Arizona Desert and California Desert and Nevada Desert and spread them out in a large area. The devices, the systems will be substantially modular, and so we can design for a particular energy output, kilowatt output, and scatter them around here and there. So you might sabotage one, but you can't sabotage them all, probably.
And you're saying that with the current technology, then, we don't have to develop a solar cell. I mean, I've heard it said on this program that solar energy isn't going to be practical until we're able to do about 10 times what we're getting the current yield out of solar. But you're saying right now that solar panels will give us the electricity that we need using current technology as long as we have the scale that you're talking about. Is that right?
Well, it's different technology. We're not talking about photovoltaic semiconductor cells. Those are a rather low efficiency. The Stirling energy devices that use reflected heat energy from the sun are much more efficient. And the manufacturers advertise 30% solar energy to electrical energy conversion. And the photovoltaic semiconductor cells are down in the 1 or 2% range.
So this isn't photovoltaic at all. I'm glad you cleared that up for me. I'm sure you probably cleared it up for everybody else before now, but it's just dawning on me. Of course, you know, in this program, all the guests and all the listeners are smarter than the host. So the host gets to ask all the dumb questions. Well, then, and we talked about security, and of course, there's three electrical grids, the Eastern, the Western, and Texas, and they're all going to be coming together, I understand, pretty soon in New Mexico at, Tres Amigos. Do you see this operation being feasible anytime in the near future?
Well, the operations that are being installed today with the solar collectors, if I understand it correctly, do not include energy storage for use at night. But they're mainly, I think, being designed for boosting electrical energy input to the utilities grids during the hot afternoons when the air conditioners are running. The 100 miles by 100 miles, which is needed to put the reflectors for providing the energy supply for the United States, so not all have to be in the same place. You could put smaller units in different places, some in Texas, some in Arizona, some in New Mexico, some in California, some in Nevada, wherever there's some open desert that's suitable, and connect them into the grid.
So you're talking about an accumulative 100 by 100 being. There could be 25 by 25 in one place and 25 mile by 25 mile someplace else, and that sort of thing is what you're saying. Is that right?
Absolutely. The systems are modular, and you can design, say, a 1,000 megawatt unit and put 1,000 megawatt units here, there, and the next place. And to put in 160 million reflectors, which is about what is needed to produce the electrical production of year 2008, takes about 500 to 600 such 1,000 megawatt units, and you can put them in a lot of different places.
Now, what is this? What is this fluid that the sunlight is heating? It isn't water, is it, or is it?
Well, the Stirling engines are a closed cycle device. They're called Stirling because they were first suggested. Closed cycle of steam engines were first suggested by an Englishman named Stirling in the 1820s. That, and the name has stuck. But the working fluid can be any material which can be heated. Usually a change of phase is useful so that it turns into a gas and drives a piston and then is cooled by the expansion and is returned as a liquid to the heating unit. And water is okay as a working fluid, so it would be actually water steam operating the thing. Or other working fluids are entirely feasible.
So the proposal to set up such a system is what you're going to be making in your paper that you're presenting to the IEEE Energy Conference at the end of this month, is that right?
That's correct. And let's talk about approximately how many reflectors are needed.
Okay.
The energy produced per reflector, I assumed to be about 10 kilowatts.
Mm-hmm.
They assume that they will receive a solar radiation for about 8 hours per day. So that's 80 kilowatt hours per day per reflector. You divide that into the electrical production of 2008 of approximately 5,000 million megawatt hours, and you come out with 160 million reflectors are needed. Now, a reflector, that number is fairly large, 160 million reflectors.
Aren't we going to have a better way of storing energy, though, before we can go to a system that relies on sunlight, which doesn't shine all the time?
Well, one problem with solar energy is that when the sun sets, the lights go out.
Hmm.
And so you need to store energy. So you need a battery, what we generally call a battery.
Mm-hmm.
And now batteries, to me, start with a small of about the diameter of a dime that fits into your wristwatch, to D cells and A cells, AA and AAA, or flashlights, and then automobile batteries, which are a bit heftier, and then a real battery. Now, a real battery is an industrial building. The way I see it, a real battery is an industrial building, two-story industrial building, that has wires coming in, the input in, and go to electrolyzing water, making hydrogen and oxygen. And at the other end, wires coming out the output end with gas turbines, essentially jet aircraft engines, or maybe a better analogy is natural gas turbines of the type that are used in many electrical production facilities in Texas. And using hydrogen and oxygen as the fuel for the turbine. Now, the problem with using hydrogen and oxygen as a fuel in a turbine is that the flame temperature probably is sufficiently high to melt most turbines.
Okay.
So you have to put in a working fluid, presumably steam, to bring the temperature down, and to maybe 2,000 Kelvin. Gas turbines can probably operate around 2,000 Kelvin. And now let's talk about the efficiency.
Yeah.
At 2,000 Kelvin, the Carnot efficiency, C-A-R-N-O-T, efficiency is quite high. And if the machinery is operating at, say, 90% efficiency, you multiply those two efficiencies, and then you multiply that by the efficiency of converting water into hydrogen and oxygen, turning electricity into chemical bond energy of hydrogen and oxygen, then you get an overall efficiency of about 50%. That means if you put in a kilowatt hour at the input end of the building, you get a half a kilowatt hour out of the output end of the building. Now, if we design a system where all of the electricity that is generated is used to make hydrogen, and all of the electricity that's sold to the utilities is made by gas turbines, then you have to generate twice as much electricity, and you need two 100 mile by 100 mile squares of reflectors in the desert instead of one to make up for the 50% efficiency lost by the battery.
Okay.
Now, that's a real battery, a building with electrolyzers in one end and gas turbines in the other and hydrogen and oxygen tanks in between. So understand that some high-temperature superconducting wires are said to be feasible nowadays and have much less loss than the copper wires and could possibly go in underground conduits along railroad right-of-ways. And that might be a way to first get the electricity from the southwestern desert to the seashore, and then get the electricity from wherever it's produced from the hydrogen and oxygen, possibly plants near the seashore, over to load centers such as L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, the Midwest, New York, Washington, Boston, and so forth. I don't know if such superconducting cables are feasible, but it's a possibility.
Okay, Cindy, so you say an area 100 miles by 100 miles in the southwest will service all the electricity needs of the entire United States with these solar thermoelectricity generators. What's your next move?
Well, if I were giving the thought to somebody who could finance the operation, I would say let's start building some plants and selling the electricity as a merchant generator.
Okay, who would own these plants? Would they be owned by the power company or investors, or what? Where do you think this can begin?
As I understand the electrical industry these days, the utilities don't own the power plants anymore. They've been broken up by rule or statute or something, individuals often finance firms from Wall Street own the power plants and sell the electricity to the utilities. So I would say we could build some plants and convenient locations and sell the electricity to the utilities.
Free energy. And there's a lot of investor money that isn't moving because of lack of confidence, I understand, from my investor friends, that this may be a ripe time to do it. So I would encourage you that if you decide to move in that direction and put together that consortium and interest people in creating this free energy supply, that you get back to me and let me know what's going on.
Okay, I will.
We're going to talk solar some more in the next half hour when Mark Scheer, president of CG Power Solutions, stops by. And he's responsible for about 23% of the installed wind capacity. And he's moving heavy into solar, so stick around.
Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all the wisdom of mankind.
Whom in the den of strangers will we meet today?
Sir Laurence Olivier, I take a simple view of life. Keep your eyes open and get on with it.